From the Marquee Media Studio inside Mark Tank, it's the Mark Haney Show.
Yes, this is the Mark Haney Show, and we are on a mission to ignite the entrepreneurial revolution right here in the hometown we love. But you know what's interesting is my friends have begun to point out to me, I would say accurately at some level, that the entrepreneurial revolution has been sparked. It has been ignited. And that maybe I should reframe my messaging from on a mission to ignite the entrepreneurial revolution into the fact that we already have an entrepreneurial revolution. And so maybe that's true. I've been thinking about that. My man Scott over here and I have been talking about that. And most of what we are working on today is building the backyard advantage. And entrepreneurship and this revolution that I am committed to igniting looks a heck of a lot more like evolution at times, right? These changes take place over months, years, and decades. And so they really tend to look more like they're evolving than this mega movement that is all of a sudden happening overnight. And so I think that that's true with us as well. Today on the show, we're going to be having Mark Romney. He is a guy that is sparking his own revolution in a way around UC Davis. He's the chief industry alliance officer at UC Davis. And we're going to be talking about Aggie Square. And Mark, when he comes on the show, he jumps right into it because it is happening. And it's happening in a very fast way. And it's making change in a way that a lot of us are probably have a hard time even imagining in the way of transforming healthcare and life sciences the way we know it. And in turn, really changing Sacramento and our entrepreneurial ecosystem as well, and really part of the entrepreneurial revolution. And so for me, I sort of compare the work that he's been doing over the last 30 years or so at UC Davis, and seeing the way Davis has evolved, seeing the way our entrepreneurial ecosystem in Sacramento has evolved, and it has been slow, but it's because people like Mark, like me at some level, have begun to spark those things. And it also makes me think about sometimes there's just the most obvious thing. You have this most obvious missing need. And many times it's a person that just comes in and fills this need. And one of those people is going to be joining us on the show today as well. Nikki Sims is one of those people. She has joined the Mark Haney effort, the Entrepreneurial Revolution effort, the Growth Factory effort. She's going to be joining me on the show today as well. Nikki, she's got a background in healthcare, so I asked her to come on and help me on the show with Mark today. So you're going to get to meet one of my new teammates. I think one of the missing pieces for the Growth Factory and for the Mark Haney effort is Nikki. And as we learn about what's happening today with UC Davis, it sparks kind of the question, what else is missing, if any? And I'm going to talk about that a little bit at the end of the show. I'm going to take a couple of minutes at the end of the show and talk about, okay, so we have what's going on at UC Davis and Aggie Square. We have what's going on here at the Growth Factory and the entrepreneurial revolution that I'm working on in the Backyard Advantage, but what's missing? We'll talk about that at the end of the show. But today, you're going to be really impressed and you're going to learn a lot by what's happening at Aggie Square. So stick around, enjoy the show of Mark Romney, and meet Nikki Sims.
I've Entrepreneurs are the heroes of the American economy. They take the risks, create the opportunities, and move the molecules. Now, back to the Marquee Media Studio, it's the Mark Haney Show.
Now, today is going to be a great show. We are here with Mark Romney and Nikki Sims. It's going to be a great show because Mark, he was just saying that he's a Rams fan, or he alluded to that fact. I've got 49er coasters sitting here on my table. He's like, hey, do you have any of the good kind of coasters there with the Rams emblem on it? And I do not. But Mark, I want to thank you for joining me on the show. And Nikki, definitely want to thank you for coming on the show. Mark is the Chief Industry Alliance Officer at UC Davis. We're going to talk to him about what's going on at Aggie Square and anything else in UC Davis as relates to innovation or entrepreneurship. And Nikki's going to help me. So for those of you that don't know Nikki yet, Nikki is part of the Growth Factory team, and she is going to co-host today's show. So today, Nikki gets to... We get to introduce Nikki to our audience in addition to Mark. So I'm going to start with you, Nikki, before we dive, because the show is going to be about Mark, right? So Before we get to Mark, let's get to know you, because you're going to be doing the heavy lifting on the question asking today. So let's get to know you a little bit. What's your background?
My background is in healthcare and life sciences. So I'm focused on corporate development in that space. Learned a little bit about venture-backed companies and kind of caught a little bit of a bug. So driving, you know, home one day, I saw the Growth Factory sign and I haven't left Mark alone since. So that's what, so I'm sitting here today. Yeah. So, Mark Romney comes from my past in life sciences, and he's such a huge leader within the Sacramento area, and Aggie Square is just going to be such a fantastic addition to Sacramento. So Really, really excited to learn more about it today and, you know, see how entrepreneurship and innovation intersects a company like UC Davis.
Yeah, well, we are, I'm glad you... I think bringing you on the team that paid for our signage. I was a little sticker shock when Scott over here gave me the bill for the signs. I'm like, oh my gosh. And then you came on board. I was like, oh, okay. We just made our money back. There we go. We got Nikki now. So all is good. So today is a chance for you to earn some of that, earn some more of that pay. Keep paying for that sign, I should say. So with that said, let's talk to Mark. I'll lead it off, but Nikki, you just interject as needed. Don't feel shy about interrupting me. Don't interrupt our guest, please. But Mark, so a little of your background. Nikki described you a little bit, but my recollection or my knowledge of you has to do with Aggie Square and you helping us out with GFX. But maybe I can have you elaborate on that. You're also a Rams fan, and you went to Christian Brothers, so I know that.
And a Dodger fan, just to clarify.
Oh, no. And you're Mitt Romney's cousin or second cousin.
First cousin once removed. But a little bit of the background. I've been with UC Davis now, coming up on 32 years. So my background prior to that was in commercial real estate. Then I was brought into UC Davis to head up their school of medicine facilities department. At that point, really just managing the space in general, eventually specializing in research space. So I handled a lot of the recruitments, of faculty recruitments and our departmental growth for the School of Medicine for probably 28 years, 29 years. And roughly 15 years ago is when industry started expressing an interest to co-locate on the Sacramento campus. Physically, they were sponsoring research for years, but it was about certain companies. It was PetNet Solutions, building a radio pharmacy to serve all the Northern California hospitals with the PET isotopes for PET scans. They wanted to collaborate with our faculty that are evolving in developing new technology. And then we had Beijing Genomics Institute, one of the largest DNA sequencing companies, select us as their North American headquarters, followed by Novogene, who took it over, largest Illumina sequencing company in the world. And then a lot of our faculty or school medicine startups started needing space to stay outside of their university labs because you got to sort of separate. So I had two buildings at that point that were eligible for industry to lease the industry because a lot of the university's buildings are bought or financed with debt financing that's bonds that are partially tax-exempt bond financing, which limits the space to 5% of the space being eligible for industry or for private companies.
Oh, it's a regulation.
It's a regulation. The IRS otherwise
associated with the bond.
Okay. Yeah, because if you violate that, then the IRS then imposes the penalty back to the day when the bond was taken for you know, not using, it's tax exempt bond for a reason, so that you're using it for universal use. Point being, I got those two buildings were the only ones I had as an asset to bring industry in. Within a few years, it was filling up too quickly. And at that point, the school of medicine's growth was substantial. One of the fastest growing medical schools in the U.S. as far as grants and funding. So I knew, as I was responsible for all the space and forecasting and striking deals, that I was going to run out of space. So in 2015 is when Aggie Square evolved. It was strictly a school of medicine solution. So at that point, the history is that I went to our dean, Lars Berglund at the time, and said, you know, I need some money to hire some consultants. And if you step back even a few years, in 2000, I did participate with a group that developed this research master plan for Sacramento. And at that point, it was an aspirational, as if the School of Medicine wanted to climb up so many steps in the ranking, how many R01 grants or how many dollars do we need to you know, move that up in the ranking? And then I translated that into how much space you need. So I did a master plan of 500,000 square feet of research space in 100,000 square foot buildings. Got the plans done, everything completed. It fell through financing-wise. So fast forward again back to 2015, I've got those plans on my shelf. And so when I asked the dean for some money to create this innovation ecosystem, because I really needed the university's growth to be taken care of, as well as the industry that are expressing additional interest. So I had those set of plans. I got money, hired Perkins and Will, one of the top, you know, research park, innovation district, master planning groups. I sat them down. I said, guys, I want you to help me out with this. I said, but the drawings are already done. And Mark, they said, oh, that's so cute. Do you have a site plan? Because I have my five buildings. They're like, yeah, that's not connected. That's, you know, university cookie cutter. Mm. But what happened is they sat down and they started drawing and sketching out the massing plan. So they said, okay, if you have 24 acres, what's the potential capacity of building space, looking at zoning and all these other issues? And so that's what we evolved to sort of say, okay, we can do 5-6 million square feet of life science and office things in that mix. And then we paused and said, okay, you know what? Let's look at the real estate absorption. What can the region handle? Because you don't want to overspeculate space. But what's enough to create this destination attraction and enough concentration of university programs and industry that makes it really vibrant and successful? So that's how we shaped it down to that, you know, 8 acres and 1.2 million square feet. This is pre-Gary May. So I'm giving you a little bit more of the insight is that I kept it quiet because it was a school medicine solution for school medicine and our industry partners. Few people from the Ag School or Vet School that we're collaborating with. And when Gary May arrived, I shared it with him and said, listen, it's been a secret because it's been sort of our school medicine project. And that's when in a meeting, I always joke that he raised his hand in a meeting that he chairs with the other vice chancellors when I was presenting this school medicine project. And he said, two things. Can we change the name to Aggie Square? And so and I'm going to put it on the radio that I sort of said, okay, great. You're taking Square from Tech Square. You just came from Georgia Tech. And Aggies, because we're the Aggies. But so I changed that. And he said, can we just open this up to all the colleges at UC Davis? And it became his sort of champion moment. And I thought, oh, that's fantastic, because it was something I didn't have to carry on my back as being the champion and out there fighting it. He was going to champion the project and really open it up to everybody. So we changed the name and we had the drawings well, pretty well established and going. So that was been, it was something to create. And I was on the road, be it in China and Europe, and across the United States with companies from 2016-17 every year on this whole concept of Aggie Square, because you had to get the companies engaged, the ones that I knew through our faculty and the relationships that I'd had, but you had to sort of implant that vision and saying it's going to be a couple of years before it's here.
Yeah.
But I want them to start working with the university now and not wait. So.
Well, I think it's important for our audience to sort of understand the importance of what you're doing. So you mentioned rankings and you mentioned being out of space. So that was a while, or being out of space at some point. So you want to move up the rankings and eventually keep yourself from running out of space. Where are we at today as compared to where we were then? And what kind of impact is this effort gonna have?
I think what was interesting in 2000 when we did that ranking, concept of trying to move up in the rankings, we were ranked 62nd as a medical school across the 120 medical schools that NIH ranks in grant funding and things. We were 62nd, and within 10 years, we were 26th without much additional space. So really aggressive, we moved it up. But today, you know, and the chancellor just announced recently that we hit $1 billion as a campus in extramural funding. And if you look at that, about 35% of that is school medicine, which is the largest component of all. You take a couple of schools together and they don't match school medicine as far as the grant funding and impact. So that's grown substantially. Our industry partnerships have grown substantially since then. And I've always had the philosophy that the companies have to work with the university because they're coming to us because of partnership and synergy. It's not about a real estate solution, but you start working today. Even while Aggie Spare is being built, we'll find temporary housing for them, but engage today.
Yeah. You want to jump in, Nikki, or I can go, I can keep asking.
Yeah. So why Sacramento poised outside of UC Davis now that I think it's Wexler's that has come in and they're doing some of the planning. So, you know, their focus on being a little bit more industry agnostic in the space. Can you talk about why Sacramento is a good choice for that?
I go back even to the companies and the major, you know, multi-billion dollar companies that I was talking to early on. They don't want to go to San Francisco. They're like, we can go to San Francisco, but it's, you know, they look at Sacramento as one, it's, people used to say it's the capital of the fifth largest economy in the world, which is true. But it's got to be looked at as the policy center of the fifth largest economy in the world. And that's what drives for California and drives for the United States. So companies are like, I need to be near the policy center. There's diversity of what UC Davis brings in its offerings and expertise, you know, number one ag school, number one vet school, top medical schools, biological sciences. That diversity and an opportunity is unique. So it's not about, you know, yeah, they can go to the Bay Area, but there's not that concentration that we have in this valley. And Sacramento, we had an opportunity. We had the land. We're one of the only campuses that has available land to do this. But we also have the great assets in the region. And so when Aggie Square was conceived, it was not about, that's a UC Davis project. It's really a regional. When Chancellor May and Mayor Steinberg got together early on, they created this committee of 5x5 to look at sites. Even though we had got our planning was pretty well along, they looked at the rail yards. They looked at West Sacramento. They looked at Sac State. They came back and they recommended that they would start with the Sacramento campus site. Not that that's the only place it's going. And I felt like at that point, the region took it on as, well, it's one of many. So what Mark Friedman and Blue Rise are going to do in West Sacramento, 2.5 million square feet, it complements and completes what we're doing in Sacramento. What you guys have at Growth Factory, it's not a competition. It just broadens our network and strength. So it becomes a sandbox venue for, you know, the things that the university does well. Another step that we did, Nick, and just to expand on your question a little bit, is that we took a pulse. We had consultants come in and take a pulse of what the university does well and what's attractive to industry. Because you can be aspirational and build an innovation district and hope that it doesn't land. We had to identify what the university all across the board does well and what industry likes, and we took the lowest hanging fruit. So if it's regenerative medicine, neurosciences, musculoskeletal, diagnostic innovation, nutrition, precision, all those kind of things that we do well. And that's the themes that we put our programs in the building so that industry gets to, the neuroscience focused industry gets to sit next to our faculty doing that. It's not just shopping mall where you're just placing kiosks. It's who goes next to who and why, and really amplifying it. So
can you give us some examples of some of the innovation that's going to be coming into the space? I think that we're hearing about CAR T therapy, you had mentioned something about food tech. Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
Sure. Without violating NDAs,
of course.
I can give you sort of some of the highlights of thematically. So we have a, was started as a smaller surgical skills environment, but I brought certain companies in to help sort of guide, to become sort of a regional training center for surgical skills and the new technology, both the wet sort of cadaveric surgical skills, typically for surgeons, with advanced technology, and then the dry virtual HoloLens type of surgical procedures. And the company said, listen, you know, you can build 2,000 square feet so your own surgeons get trained. That's great. You build a little bit more and people will come to you and the technology comes. So then companies with that, it's not only just training our surgeons on technology that's advanced, it's those companies, the external companies or our faculty develop new surgical technology. There's the black box testing environment. They're validating, it's improving it. So there's that joint investment and collaboration release and patenting of technology that happens versus just a training center.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thinking about this, so this innovation district, this, I guess, this environment mm-hmm. that you're in the that you have now, but you're in the process of making, you know, really world-class. you talked about attracting larger corporations to come in. Will it also attract a certain type of student and a certain type of startup to come into here?
Definitely. It's the innovation ecosystem in a sense that you have, you know, when we talk about students, one of the things that Gary May and the campus leadership did, which was brilliant, was create a program called Quarter at Aggie Square. Okay. Because one of the things they found out is you can't tell faculty where to teach. But if you're trying to get the diversity of faculty and instruction in an experiential learning environment to come to Sacramento, you can't tell the faculty to move. But you create a quarter at Aggie Square for undergrads, freshmen and sophomores that will live in Aggie Square for a quarter. You make the faculty sort of compete to teach. And it's usually from different colleges. So very diverse, you know, backgrounds and focus in a thematic area. The companies love it because now the undergrads are there. The companies are involved in some of this training, but at the same time, they're grabbing interns at freshman and sophomore level, not waiting until the seniors that have already had a commitment somewhere else. So that's getting the students in there. It's getting the faculty. As far as diversity, when in an innovation ecosystem, you'll have the training, everything from workforce training, because again, the jobs in innovation districts are typically 40% don't require a four-year degree. Everything's, oh, it's all the PhDs. It's not. And a lot of companies now that I work with, even in advanced lab stuff, are saying, we'll take a two-year certificate employee.
Okay.
And we'll continue to train them because PhDs typically will jump from startup to startup and they're hard to retain. But you take these other ones, become lifelong employees. But so you have that, you know, the workforce training environment, you have the, you know, university student environment, you have faculty in their own research labs doing translational research, let's say. They've got their startups, smaller companies who are leveraging both the university assets and core facilities. Larger companies are there because they're both investing in those startups, you know, there for the talent. They're also either providing services or sort of an acquiring company. So they often say they don't want to read about the unicorn that comes out of the growth factory. They want to be there to invest along with you.
Right.
And be there early invest. And so there's definitely a reason for them to be there. And a lot of larger companies will also look at saying, hey, we're going to spin out a new division of a major corporation. So you don't want to go big. And so you'd rather be in an environment where you can test it out.
Okay.
So that kind of stuff is where.
So I think talent acquisition is going to be critical. And for Sacramento, it's, you know, keeping our students here to build their families and work long term. It sounds like there's a lot of opportunity at Aggie Square, but from just the regional perspective, are there things that we should be thinking about a few years before Aggie Square actually opens to be able to connect some of those dots so that there's more opportunities for those students lined up?
No question. One of the things we've done with the industry partners, because they'll also say it's these innovation districts are never a real estate solution, because if the real estate is the only factor, then it doesn't pencil. But the talent is really important. And we talked about like these, the non-degree, so the workforce training that has to go on. It's critical now in many of those cases to start the workforce training now, which we are doing. And we partnered with Los Rios Community College District, Sac State early on. We all got together and said, listen, there's pipelines of workforce training or certain, you know, trade training that's going on, but there's gaps. Mm-hmm. And if we don't get our act together now, the industry shows up and it's like, where's the talent? And we've got to be able to pump out enough that we don't care that any excess talent that we produce can go to the Bay Area. We're okay with that. But the companies want to be, so that's what we're starting now. And I think it's really important with Growth Factory and others for us to get together to bring you guys up to speed on the thematic areas that we're talking. So you can be involved in the workforce training for the jobs that are there. And secondly, university made a commitment to the city and others that we would hire 20% of the new jobs in Aggie Square from the surrounding Oak Park and other communities or zip codes around the health system. You can't just, and those are, you know, the sort of life science or tech jobs. It's not the custodians or anything else. So It's, you've got to go into those communities now and identify where there's interest that they have. Because you can't just say, well, you're going to be a lab tech. You're going to be, if there's interest, we've got to do the training. So it's an intentional, we made that commitment. So we're obligated and sort of driven and empowered to sort of get them engaged, find out where they're interested in, and start doing this workforce training. So when it opens in early 2025, the companies, you know, they can do their internships. Some of the companies now say, well, if you can train them, we'll take them as an intern 6 months before we move in. So they can be at the East Coast, wherever it is. That's what's critical. And that's where, as Sacramento's, we've got to step up and do it organically and efficiently, but do it now.
Are there partnerships developing that help make that so you're not having to do the lift yourself?
Definitely. So there's a Nimble, if you're familiar with the Nimble agency. So recently, UC Davis, along with Cytiva, one of our industry partners, longstanding industry partners, and Solano Community College went together and got a $500,000 NIBL grant on biomanufacturing workforce training. And that's just sort of the start of what, and what we're doing with sort of this whole big cell and gene therapy hub that we're developing at Square. And to expand on that, there's a couple of companies that are looking at creating a West Coast cell and gene therapy hub. And their goal really is, it's not about, you know, beating out the Bay Area. It's about creating a cell and gene therapy hub that handles workforce training, process development, manufacturing, QA, distribution, all the logistics, but within a hospital network system. Their goal is really just to bring the cost of these therapies down for patients. One, so insurance companies will start to pick up. And two, that more people can be treated, more underserved communities. And three, to help with the rare disease aspects that oftentimes companies are saying, this, there's only 50 patients in California that have this disease. There's no return on the investment, what it takes to develop the therapy. But you socialize and bring that cost down from $600,000 of treatment down to $100,000.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I think that for the audience, it's going to be really important to kind of define what cell and gene therapy is for folks that aren't in life sciences. Sure. And I think from a healthcare perspective, one of the big issues is that it's difficult to get certain types of therapies to the patients that need them the most. You have to, you know, send the patients over to a place like MD Anderson or somewhere on the East Coast to a research hub to be able to provide cell and gene therapy. And oftentimes it's a last resort after they've had a bunch of other really expensive treatments. So bringing cell and gene therapy to Sacramento, especially, you know, knowing we have obviously UC Davis, but three other very large healthcare systems, talk a little bit about what that work means to the region and also to patients that are going to start having access to these types of services.
I think it's huge. One of the things that UC Davis has what's called an alpha clinic. So the California Institute for Regenerative Medicine, which is the agency that originally did the $3 billion bond for cell and gene therapy and recently got reapproved last year, I think for $5.6 billion, really to advance these therapies. They created a thing called the Alpha Clinic, which is a clinical trials network that currently all five UC hospitals and City of Hope have these sites for cell and gene therapy trials that are either CIRM funded or even private company funded. So that's at capacity. For CIRM, what an AgriScore environment or this concentration of cell and gene therapy is really amplifying their $5.6 billion, but bringing industry in to help reduce the cost to advance the commercialization of therapies that are out there. And there's so many more opportunities for getting these clinical trials in these patients because UC Davis, again, has a comprehensive cancer center. So it becomes another pathway, and our faculty are passionate about the cell and gene therapies and everything else that they have at their disposal. But it's really reaching more communities of need and of interest that normally, versus a patient having the wherewithal to fly to MD Anderson to the East Coast, is rare. And oftentimes, like I said, it's more at the end stage of the cancer.
You've referenced the growth factory a couple times, and I appreciate it because that's what we eat, drink, and sleep around here. And for those that might not know what it is, we make investments. We're a startup accelerator. We make investments into early stage companies. And then we've rallied the leaders of Sacramento together to create a backyard advantage for entrepreneurs. And these are really leaders around the region that can give these entrepreneurs and these founders a real advantage by opening up doors and providing them with all kinds of education and so on. With that said, I'm going to put on my investor hat for a second because we have like 100 investors and we run in these networks of people that want to invest into companies that have these big upsides like many medical companies would. So maybe walk through some of that, you know, some of the opportunity that's going to be created there and why that may be kind of like the pros and cons of, you know, healthcare investment, especially from the early stage, because a lot of times it takes a long time to get the products to market. But there's also some pluses besides the upside, because there's all kinds of non-dilutive funding that goes into these things because everybody wants healthcare to win.
That's true. I think, you know, one of the unique things about an AgriScore and as it evolves in an environment, you've got the faculty who are passionate, and the faculty that are being moved to AgriScore are really more the cutting edge, translational, transformative, innovative thematic areas. So as even a startup that's even external, you're getting, they're getting an opportunity to work with the university faculty and or to sort of vet and identify the valley of death issues early on. You know, the fast fails sometimes in medical device are far better than long drawn out processes. And I think there's also the opportunity of leveraging even our faculty doing sort of validation or testing of the technology or advancing development. There's also the other investments from the, you know, if the NIH is investing in a faculty member and developing new technology, and then it could be licensed, then the university owns the IP, but then it's licensed to the faculty member. But you guys have Growth Factory and others can then leverage that. It's a sandbox for investment. So the university is not controlling investment of who gets to invest. It's not Wexford or developer partner. They're providing the sandbox again. So it's an opportunity when there's vetted, advanced, total engagement and partnership between the Growth Factory and others to seize on these opportunities to invest where investment needs. It's a little bit like an insider trading in a sense, but it's not. But it's the opportunity where it's, nobody's closing the doors and saying, don't come in, look at what we're evaluating.
Well, what I'm imagining, so when we launched the Growth Factory, it was just over a year ago. And, you know, we limited it to 90 to 100 investors. But we got questions from a lot of prospective investors. Are there enough? Because our focus is Sacramento region. Are there enough great companies in Sacramento worth investing into? And we've already invested into 30 in the first year. And we believe that there's a good pipeline for more investable companies. And I think Aggie Square is going to be, you know, one of those pipelines. So we envision Aggie Square and the Mobility Center and other things that are happening around the region to create more investable companies so that we will, compared to what we maybe had 5 or 10 years ago, they're now servicing more than they ever have been. And when Aggie Square comes online and some of these other things that are happening, we're going to have way more investable companies here in Sacramento.
I believe so. And I believe it'll also draw from outside of Sacramento that want to leverage the ecosystem of an Aggie Square environment with the other companies. So it's not all about the UC Davis startups, which are fantastic, and they may do 10 or so a year that come out. But it's really attracting because it's the testing ground for both, you know, regional and international companies. So one of the things about, you know, Wexford's providing, let's say, 40,000 square feet of lab space, that's sort of the incubator. They're agnostic. So any group accelerator or growth factor can operate out of that space or engage with their startups. They're not touching the startups. And then they have like 15,000 square feet of office or tech area. But you've got companies that may come from UK saying, listen, we want to try out the US market for 3 months. It's not a long-term lease. They're testing out the market, so they're advanced. So because it's a unique market and it's in the policy center, so it's going to attract from the region or saying, that's where I want to test my company out. It's a little less expensive too than the Bay Area, but the grand scheme of things is that the value of what you're getting out of that assessment by the university and other companies in there and vetting and validating is pretty dynamic. And as a company and as an investor, I think you want to make sure that if I'm investing in this horse, it's in the right stable, right? To make sure that it's quality. And that's what I think Aggie Square as a venue brings, you know, is huge.
Yeah, Sacramento hasn't attracted its fair share. Well, it's probably fair, but its comparable share of venture capital from outside the region, right? Silicon Valley, Austin, Boston, others, New York, other cities have done a far superior job in attracting venture capital than what we have. But it feels like things are in the process of changing. Nikki, I don't know if you've seen that.
Yeah, and I think also there's a great opportunity for the companies to be able to get potentially pilots or some growth within, you know, the early traction stage where Growth Factory might come in, but then there's a partnership. These corporate partnerships are going to be really critical. So, you know, hopeful that there's work that's happening early on to really start to plant those seeds that this is a collective of corporates that are all, you know, very focused on the growth within the region and being able to foster some of that innovation. I think and I'm interested in your thoughts. One of the challenges when it comes to biotech is that it's a global market. And so while a company is constantly looking globally for their sales and for their market expansion, they need the talent locally to be able to support the work they're doing. So the balance is just really tricky. And, you know, there's an opportunity to get that rooted now if, you know, the work's already happening would be awesome. So I'm not sure if you can speak on that.
No, I think there's certain aspects of the workforce training that started now, and there's other areas that we need to evolve as we're discussing and thematically. So we don't want to start producing a lot of talent in an area that's not going to be occupied in Aggie Square.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're going to say, well, we've got to do all these certain life sciences, but that technology is not going to be there. Then you're sort of, you're giving false expectations to a lot of students, and it's wasting a lot of time. Mm-hmm. So I think it's constantly taking the pulse of where we are with industry and thematically with the university, and including the other universities that are going to participate in Aggie Square. But it's groups like you and taking that pulse and reevaluating where we're at and where the trend is so that we can stay ahead of it, so that we can get those workforce training programs, the labor and talent prepared early on so the companies can engage with them before Aggie Square opens. Because mm-hmm. for many of the companies, Aggie Square is really just an amplification of a business partnership with the university and the others that's being established now. And you know, we start on the East Coast and launch partnership wise, and we're doing stuff now, we're not waiting. But Aggie Square is just a formalization of a larger footprint of this shared partnership. Mm-hmm. So the employment and talent stuff has to sort of come together now, and we just need to identify those resources. And so that's where we're going with that.
Can we talk about intellectual property? Because we had just talked about a lot of new companies that are coming in and then startups and how they're all connecting with each other. And you have had the pleasure of going all over the world and having a lot of conversations. Tell us, I know we get a lot of companies that are so excited to have potential funding partners come across the other side of the table. And you did a really great talk on intellectual property and how to protect that. Can you tell us some of your experiences and maybe some of the things that entrepreneurs should think about early on in their journey to protect the things that they're working on?
So yeah, speaking just outside of the university, one of the aspects, I work closely with the FBI on really trying to help faculty and or students, you know, like protect their IP. Oftentimes, so the FBI has just been a great partner. Out of the Roseville office here, the team, sit down with faculty, sit down with biomedical engineering students and explain that a four-digit passcode on your laptop, you know, it doesn't protect your IP, you know, that identifying and be protective so that you're not finding out 2 years from now that your technology's already been spun out in China or India or somewhere else. So it's really about protecting the networks. We, you know, working with the FBI and others to say, how can we protect the innovation ecosystem? It's one of the ripest places for IP theft, because if you have an incubator mm-hmm. there, then a company can come in there for 3 months. Well, the company's failing if they're trying to get into the networks to sort of steal IP. So you got to be proactive and sort of prevent. And the FBI looks at it as like minimizes the amount of work that they have to do. So there's a lot of resources and they're very supportive about how to help companies protect the IP, to understand where there's, you know, strong interest from foreign companies in technology we have. So it's not that we're doing something wrong, but we have technologies of great interest. How do we make sure that's protected? And oftentimes people don't think about that security side of it or the technology side or the network side of it because they're just excited about this new product they've got. That's one thing. I think, you know, it's fortunate the university, if a faculty member or student or staff develops something on campus within university space, the IP belongs to the university. But then they license it right back to the faculty member, and there's royalty splits. But it's more about the protecting in the environment, the IP that doesn't get taken or stolen, that you can't control and you're losing it. So
who's most likely to take that in that type of environment? You mentioned in a somebody might, I guess, hack, which is, you know, obvious theft. Mm-hmm. But what about just having an awareness? You're in a lab and you can see what's going on without necessarily doing something that might be, but most people would think is illegal, like hacking into somebody's computer. Yeah. But hey, just observing the kind of things that's, you know, other ideas that people are coming up with, that's.
Well, and you know, it's one of those things I think that the hacking is the criminal act. But the other thing that happens sometimes is when you get a free postdoc for a year, a lot of groups, the FBI and others will say, you know, be careful when somebody says, well, I'll give you a free postdoc for a year. Oftentimes the person's there, so they're not hacking, but they're learning the technology and really understanding the technology. They can easily take it back and replicate it.
Yeah.
So it's really being aware of, you know, nothing comes for free and you know, working with certain groups and getting an understanding and appreciation from agencies or departments on how really to protect it. You know, be careful about the environment you're in and so that you're backing up information, wherever it is. but you're thoughtful about the steps and appreciating that there's always groups on the outside, locally, regionally, nationally, and internationally, that have interest in the technology and the IP. And everybody'd love to have get access to it and share it, and they can spin it off and sell it to somebody else. But it's just being, it's pausing for the moment and sort of saying, you know, you don't so open with your IP and share it and things like that, that if it's protected and you want to advance it, because the valuation drops a little bit, right? If it's already made it out its way into the market. So
yeah, without question. So what didn't we ask you? What else do we want to make sure we cover today?
You know, I think we talked earlier about sort of the thematics. So what AggieSquare is a sandbox, and I'll use that 100 times because it's really just a venue for the region to leverage and partner with the university and other companies. Thematically, we're doing what we do well as a university is what's the foundation of what's going to evolve there, but other opportunities evolve that sort of touch on, you know, if it's with SMUD or somebody else's interest in something or what you guys are doing. My role is really sort of finding the connections and thinking outside the box in a sense of matching you up with somebody else who I knew has a similar interest. And sometimes it's a crazy idea, but it really fits. I'm not negotiating. It's Wexford's negotiating the leases with the companies, but I'm sort of sharing the concept and throwing out the ideas of who they can connect with and who can go next to who and why. And that's the passion. That's what I bring to the table in my experience. And that's what AggieSquare is just about, really organically and intentionally deciding who goes next to who and why, and not just filling a shopping mall or how many retail stores you can get. It's very specific. So,
well, we're very fortunate to have AggieSquare. We love the collaborative approach that you're taking. And I guess we're you know, then Gary, some of that vision, even within the college, broadening the vision. It's super exciting. We know it's going to change a lot of lives, and, you know, for us to have some role in there and some partnership, it's really an honor. So thanks for sharing a story too. And we look forward to continuing to get the message out if it's helpful to the startup community and to the investor community, because within that, we think that there's probably partnerships that could be built that could be beneficial to the people inside the ecosystem that you're building.
Definitely. Great. Thank you so much, Mark. I really appreciate it. Yeah. And Nikki. Yeah.
Thanks for coming on the show.
Now, let's get Mark's perspective and closing thoughts from today's show. We're back to the Marquee Media Studio. It's the Mark Haney Show.
So welcome back to the Mark Haney Show. I am Mark Haney, and great show today talking about, you know, AggieSquare. And AggieSquare really is this incredible opportunity, and maybe it's the missing piece of igniting the entrepreneurial revolution, because there's so many sparks that have begun to smolder and, you know, begun to catch fire a little bit, but they haven't turned into an inferno yet. We are not rocking as an ecosystem, as a region, in entrepreneurship and venture capital like they are certainly in Austin and Boston and New York and Seattle and, of course, the Silicon Valley and the Bay Area. We aren't there yet, but we have begun. But it makes me sort of think, what's the missing piece? We have AggieSquare building. It's not even off the ground yet, but it's starting to, you know, it's starting to happen. It's not active, but great things are happening at UC Davis in entrepreneurship. Heck, the Growth Factory is invested into a number of great startups that are coming out of UC Davis. And there is a pipeline of several more. So that's good. I think a few weeks ago on the show, we talked about the Mobility Center and all the great things that are happening around automobiles and really moving people from end products from point A to point B. There is something happening at Sac State and with SMUD and others around mobility. So there's some great things happening there. Of course, there are other leaders around Sacramento bringing us together with the work that GSEC is doing, Startup Sac and the other universities. And there's so many others that I won't name you all, but what's missing? And that's kind of the interesting thing about what we're doing. And I think one of the things that's missing is our brand identity at some level for Sacramento, but also the brand identity for the Backyard Advantage and for the Growth Factory and the work that my team and I are doing here. Of course, we have the Mark Haney Show, the Growth Factory, and a number of the companies that we've invested into. But for things to go viral and get contagious, there's one other thing that is missing at this stage. And so I'm gonna put this in the form of a challenge. And some of you know that I record the opening and closing of the show at a different day as to when the show airs, and a different day of when I record the interview with, in this case, Mark Romney. I'm playing this back a couple of days later. And if you're watching this on YouTube, you can see that I've begun to grow a mustache. And I started it on November 1st for the cause of Movember, right? Some of you may have seen that where people, men predominantly, are growing mustaches in November for this cause called Movember, which is it's for men's health and making us more aware of men's health issues like prostate cancer and those kinds of things. And it was started actually in Australia and has migrated all the way to all over the world. It's here in the U.S. Heck, I'm growing a mustache out here because I have friends that are suffering from prostate cancer. And so I am growing it in their honor. But what might be missing for our brand, for the Growth Factory and for Sacramento, we don't have our mustache. You know, if you're a cancer, if cancer is the cause that you're most known for supporting, then you're wearing pink, right? We all wear pink when we're supporting cancer. When we're doing men's health awareness, it's a mustache. And there's other things like that that sort of are these symbols, these residual effects, residual items that go along with helping things to go viral. And I am suggesting to you all that we create that for the startup ecosystem in our region. And, you know, there's not probably enough time on this show for me to get into my story of what I think it should be, but I'm just going to tell you what I think we should consider. And then I will challenge all of you to help me come up with that symbol that will help us remember what the backyard advantage is all about, what the entrepreneurial revolution is all about for Sacramento and this hometown that we love. And what I think the symbol for us should be, for the backyard advantage, should be arms locking with arms, right? We all know that there's different ways to shake hands, right? Sometimes we do the traditional handshake. I'll call that the missionary style handshake, which you can imagine. Sometimes it's a soul handshake where it's it's up a little higher. But there's also one where you're grabbing arm in arm, like you're lifting somebody up. And that helping hand up, that powerful, I think it's kind of like the most powerful way to grip another person, to pull them in some way. And it's when you grab their wrist and they grab your wrist and you both lock on with kind of like a double locking on the wrist. And it's how I've lifted other people up that were in physically tenuous scenarios. But I think it's how we can lift, symbolically, how we can lift up our fellow entrepreneur and our fellow ecosystem partner. There should be a collaborative effort, and we call it the power of with here at Haney Biz, the Growth Factory, and on the Mark Haney Show. But what's the symbol? I think it's the secret handshake, right? The secret arm lock. And we'll talk about that more in the coming months and maybe more in the coming years if it catches on. But if you have a better one, I am open ears. I'm always open to figuring out how we can work together to make the backyard advantage more relevant, to throw fuel on the fire of the entrepreneurial revolution, and to help entrepreneurs succeed in our region. So for all you out there fighting the good fight for entrepreneurship, for our freedom, for our security, for our way of life, here at Haney Biz, here at the Growth Factory, here on the Mark Haney Show, we are never above you, never below you, always by your side.
This segment includes the personal knowledge, experiences, and opinions about angel investing by seasoned angel investors. This content is for informational purposes only and should not be considered as legal, tax, investment, or financial advice. Nothing in the segment constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, or endorsement.